Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about issues of the day from a biblical perspective, as well as highlights from interviews, conferences, and events. Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight. My name is Jenna. I am joined today by my delightful friend and co-host, Alyssa. And we are so excited. Today we get to have Camille Kiefel join the Spotlight podcast. Camille Kiefel runs a fantastic organization that she's going to introduce in just one second, but we're having her on to talk about how she's going to be helping people after she won a confidential settlement after suing her mental health providers. Camille, we are so excited to have you on. Can you introduce what you do with DTrans Help?
Yes. So I'm president of DTrans Help. We are a nonprofit organization by detransitioners for detransitioners. We connect detransitioners and those who care about us with the resources they need.
That is fantastic. How long have you guys been in operation?
I think it's been a few years now. So I feel like I think it was 2023 when we started.
I would love to get to know, for our audience's sake, what kind of prompted this? What is your story when it comes to detransitioning?
So during adolescence, I was struggling with trauma around becoming a woman. And I started to dress more masculine to protect myself. And then in college, I was still struggling with being a woman. And I was in these women's studies classes, and I was introduced to the idea of being non-binary. So like I was struggling with gender throughout my adulthood. And then in around 2016, I saw a mental health professional, and I thought that she was going to work with me through this and see if I was non-binary or if I wasn't. And now looking back, I know that they're on the gender-affirming care model. So there's not any actual exploration around gender and trauma. And so she affirmed the non-binary identity. And it was in 2020 where I was struggling with severe mental illness. I wasn't able to work. I was on long-term disability because I couldn't go to work because I was having panic attacks. I would see things because I was having trauma around activist circles from my time in women's studies and from call-out culture. And so I'd see things and I would just collapse onto myself when I would get triggered by seeing something. And so I was just, you know, I struggled with generalized anxiety disorder, my ADHD, major depressive disorder. I was also treatment resistant. I did not respond well to medications. And at that time was on the second round of transcranial magnetic stimulation therapy, which is a treatment that was approved for my treatment-resistant depression. And so I reached out to my doctor because at that point I'd tried everything conventional medicine had to offer and asked about looking into a, at the time I thought it was going to be a reduction. So it kind of throughout that entire time, there was little communication between me and the medical professionals and the therapist I was working with. Like for the surgeon, I didn't realize that she would be removing my milk ducts. There's no discussion around that. I did not realize that for the nipple graft, they'd actually be taking the nipples off my breast and then putting them back on. Looking back, I'm like, why did I not realize that? But I was also having difficulty doing research because of that, because of my trauma around being in activist circles. So I'd see things and get triggered. And so I wasn't able to properly do research either. I had two short Zoom calls, less than an hour, with the mental health professionals. And then on August 27th, 2020, they performed a double mastectomy on me. And I developed all these health issues after the surgery. I developed vertigo. I had trouble swallowing, bony prominences, Raynaud's syndrome, a lot of weird symptoms from the surgery. I went to the ER multiple times. I was not sleeping through the night, so they gave me Ambien. So it was just this horrible experience. And at that point, I decided like I either need to end my life or I need to figure out how to get better because this isn't working. And my doctors took me seriously at first until they thought I had psychosomatic fever. Then at that point, they told me to go see a therapist. And I had been to therapy my entire life. So I'm like, I've done about 20 years of this. Like, another therapist isn't going to help me. So I really worked on addressing my physical health. And then I was shocked when the thing that started getting better was my mental health, not my physical health. Wow. And so I continued addressing my physical health. I did manual therapy. I remember reading an article about diet, and yeah. I was thinking, like, she's talking about how depression and addressing her diet helped with that. And I thought at the time it was so odd because no doctor had ever told me that your diet can impact your mental health. Yeah. And I'd been a pescatarian for over a decade. So the only form of protein I was getting was fish, and I wasn't getting a whole lot of it. So I started to address my diet. I did hybrid oxygen therapy. After 60 treatments, my ADHD went from 72 points to 6. So significant improvement there. And my anxiety also improved on that treatment as well. So then it was about a year and a half after the surgery was done, that was this right? Am I actually non-binary? And that was shortly after I detransitioned. I didn't want other girls and women to go through what I went through. So I started to look into a lawsuit. It was very difficult because not a lot of people want to take on these cases because they're so novel. But eventually I did find an attorney. Yeah, I'm happy to say that my lawsuit is resolved. So
praise God. And what an incredible story of just what you said about only getting 2 short conferences with these therapists before they said, yes, she's ready for this next huge step. It sounds like they didn't really talk you through exactly what the surgery would entail. What you were saying of like, well, I couldn't do much research on it by yourself because you were already so overwhelmed with panic attacks. Did they give you much information on the surgery at all?
My surgeon, and this is kind of the tricky thing with these lawsuits, because I also tried to have a lawsuit against her, but because of the statute of limitations, that lawsuit went through. And many detransitioners are in that same boat. So it was kind of odd with her because I felt like she knew more than she was telling me. Or not that more than she was telling me, but she'd say something. And then she said, like, she had this look on her face, like, oh, I'm done. This sort of, she assumed I knew more than I actually did.
It was kind of an omission. So she would tell the truth, but not the full truth.
Well, I think with her, it was that she assumed her patient, or like, and I don't know if she does this with other patients, but she just assumed that I knew more than I actually did. And so, and I didn't know the questions to ask. So, I think the other problem is too, is that I do think a lot of these people mean well. They're trying to help trans people. They think, oh, this is a, these people are discriminated against. They need help. But the problem is that, they're not giving, like when a patient is looking into this procedure, they're not giving them all the information because they don't want to make trans people feel uncomfortable. And you can't do that. Like when you're talking about a medical procedure, you need to have all the information. What are all the risks, including detransition? You need to explain, okay, this is what we're actually going to do and walk the patient through it without the assumptions that they know everything.
Right. Because it sounds like from what you've been talking about that you didn't truly have informed consent on any of your procedures. Because I understand in one sense, doing your own homework and knowing which questions to ask. But in another sense, it's the doctors, the surgeons, the mental health professionals' responsibility to make sure their patient is well aware of everything surrounding whatever procedure they're looking to get. So that's just kind of shocking that, you know, you're being forced to have to know everything. When in reality, it's the doctors and the surgeons that should be being the ones explaining everything to you in depth, no matter how uncomfortable it might be, so that you can truly make an informed decision. Because, you know, even from the beginning of what you shared, what there were a lot of things that happened during your surgery that you had no idea were going to happen. I mean, that's just insane, the level of uninformed consent that's going on right now.
As soon as we come back from the other side of the break, Camille, I would love to hear what you're doing now to make sure that people who are in the position you used to be in are informed and are getting the true help that they need. So we'll be right back after this break.
This is an Illinois Family Institute, illinoisfamily.org update.
Have you ever noticed how the legacy media wants you to believe that defending innocent human life is somehow an extreme position? A recent Gallup poll tells a different story. More Americans are recognizing that there must be limits on abortion and that the lives of preborn babies matter. This should encourage us, but it should not make us complacent. Every child is created in the image of God and has immeasurable value. Every mother deserves compassion, support, and truth. Changing laws is important, but changing hearts and minds is essential. At Illinois Family Institute, we will continue working to educate, equip, and encourage Christians to stand boldly for the sanctity of human life while faithfully praying for hearts and minds to be changed. Visit illinoisfamily.org to learn more.
Welcome back to Illinois Family Spotlight. Thank you so much for listening. I am here with Alyssa and Camille Kiefel. Camille is president of D-Trans Help. And Camille, what is your website real quickly?
It is www.dtranshelp.org.
Perfect. If you guys want to go help her in any way, shape, or form, I highly recommend looking up her website. I wanted to real quickly go back to what Alyssa was saying before the break came in on informed consent. Camille, do you think that that is still a problem today?
So I do think that when it comes to how much harm is being done right now and how many detransitioners we're seeing coming to the forefront of this issue, informed consent is a huge part of that. And like I was saying, I do think that a lot of these mental health and medical providers do mean well. They are wanting to, they're thinking that they're helping the trans community, but at the cost of harming individuals. And then there's that cognitive dissonance because of the fact that instead of recognizing, okay, people are actually being harmed by this, and like, what do we do to prevent this from happening to other people? It becomes blaming the victims of these procedures.
I think I'm understanding your point correctly, that we often put a lot of pressure on people that undergo these procedures to know better, when in reality, it should be the professionals, the doctors, the nurses, the surgeons, the parents that are the ones leading the charge in speaking truth and actual helpful medicine into people's lives. That we put unnecessary shame on people that undergo these procedures, when in reality, it's other people. It's the professionals that should be the ones saying, no, let's explore another option that has far less risk. And I just remember listening to part of Chloe Cole's recent Senate testimony and her saying that a lot of pressure that came from her making a decision that she didn't really understand. Again, the informed consent problem, that she had no idea the repercussions that would happen after her double mastectomy when she was only 15 years old. And the biggest piece of, I don't know if you could say advice, but medical advice that her parents were given was, you either transition your daughter or you bury her. Because if you don't transition her, she is most likely going to kill herself. Which, of course, as a parent, I mean, I have a daughter. I would be terrified if a doctor told me, you either do this procedure or your daughter is going to take her life. That is emotional blackmail on parents. And we need to hold medical professionals, mental health professionals, to a higher degree of integrity when it comes to handling these very real issues. So yeah, I'm just so sorry, Camille, that you didn't have good mental health professionals, good medical professionals in your life that were actually willing to sit down with you and go through everything, no matter how uncomfortable it might be. You know, I remember just when I was pregnant with my daughter and going through different birth plan options, like they will sit you down and they'll go through, like, you can have an epidural, you can go to a birth center, like, why is it that we don't do that with this issue? You know, it's so strange.
Right. Yeah. And to explore detransition, I think it's unfortunate that there's this idea that's transphobic and that they can't emotionally handle the idea of like talking about detransition. And this is something that you really need to explore, because there's the fact that when you detransition, you don't have really an established community. There has been people that have started to come together for detransitioners, but there just isn't the resources, and there's not the medical knowledge around it either. It's like, I remember going to, I was looking at reconstruction surgery, particularly a DIEP flap, and which is where they take fat from one part of the body, and then I think an artery, and then they make breast out of that. And I saw this the surgeon who was recommended to me, and she was telling me how good of a job that the surgeon had done previously for my top surgery. And this is something, as somebody who's had trauma around that, who, I mean, after I take a shower, I am having to look at these scars every day. There's these constant reminders, like I put on a dress and the dress fits poorly, and or I wear the wrong top, and then it shows, like, how it falls on me doesn't look right. And, you know, to tell somebody that is incredibly painful. And this sort of like idea is that, well, it's a part of your gender journey. And detransitioners don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that your pain was, that it was okay what you'd gone through.
That kind of moves into one of the subjects that I know you're pretty passionate about, which is a lot of people talk about what's happening with the targeting of kids and minors when it comes to transitioning, and specifically the LGBTQ+ agenda. And it is terrifying. But you also brought up that there's not a lot of conversation going on around vulnerable adults. Not everyone is immune as soon as you turn 18, that, oh, you know everything. What have you to say about that?
So when it comes to vulnerable adults, I think that if you haven't been around severe mental illness, it might be easy to think like, oh, well, you're an adult, you should know better, you should be able to do the research. But like I talked about earlier, that I had CPTSD, which is complex post-traumatic stress disorder, which just pretty much means that it happened after there's multiple events versus one, which is PTSD. But so I'm struggling with this condition, and I'm not able to do research because of this. And then I wasn't able to work because of my panic attacks. Like I'd have panic attacks trying to go into work. And then my depression, my anxiety, like it felt like my body was running on a voltage higher than it should have been. There were times where my mom had to physically move me out of my bed, or like I'd be in the car and just like I'd tell my body to move and my body wouldn't move. You know, when we're talking about severe mental illness, like that is a real thing. And there's a lot of different factors in there. And, you know, we were trying very hard to get it so that I would be functional. And that's why I also looked into the surgery, was because I did want to get better. And it was just, it's just difficult. It can be, for somebody who hasn't lived it, like it can be difficult to understand, but my parents had to go through with it. And I hate that my mom had to live with that as well. It wasn't just me, it was just my family as well. So I think there is a need for addressing mental health, also looking at the physical health and how that's all connected, to get us to a place where we are functioning members of society.
Yeah. And also fully informed about everything. You know, it always reminds me that we're not just like one thing, you know, we're not just a body, but we're also a soul. And that's where, like, you know, your mental health comes from. So being able to address both of those things together actually produces better results. You actually do get better. Like, for example, you said you started focusing on your physical health and your mental health got better, because we're joined beings. Like that's how God has created us. So Camille, this chapter is kind of behind you now, I would say. You've come out on top as somebody who has won against medical providers, and people are now going to be looking towards you thinking, okay, what's next? What is next?
So what's next is that I'm going to be continuing with my nonprofit, DTrans Help, just providing resources for detransitioners and those who care about us, and getting them the help they need. I'm going to continue on to legislation. And I think that that's an important aspect of this that needs to be addressed because, for instance, with the statute of limitations, that has been holding a lot of detransitioners back from getting the justice they need.
How would that look, though, with legislation? Would you be doing it state by state?
So it's pretty much where we're needed. So I do work with some nonprofit organizations, and they'll reach out to me and let me know of, like, what's available to testify for. So a lot of the stuff I have done so far has been state by state. I've also done testimony in my home state of Oregon. There's been a couple things. Part of them is making sure that detransitioners are getting healthcare. There's some testimony I've been a part of for that. Another one is insurance, because making sure that detransition is an insurance and that it's well known is an important aspect to detransitioners getting care. I've also spoken out against conversion therapy bills because the fact that when it comes to conversion therapy, it's not what it used to be and what that term was originally for. So the physical abuse that was done towards the gay population was unacceptable. Having someone explore trauma around gender, that sort of exploratory therapy, is not conversion therapy, but for many, it's considered conversion therapy. So I've also done testimony against that as well.
I just think it's amazing how you are taking something so painful and traumatic in your life and choosing to filter that and channel that through helping other people who have gone down the same path you have and giving them the resources that they need. I just think that's beautiful that you're able to do that, because I'm sure it's very painful for you still with living with the decisions that the doctors made for you that you weren't fully aware of. And it's just so sad that it's so allowed in our society. And I was just really shocked at the surgeon's response to you when you were exploring, you know, another surgery to try to fix some of the issues that have come up. That instead of her response being, actually, your surgeon did a great job. Instead, it should have been, this surgery never should have taken place. I'm so sorry. Let's explore some options for you so that we can try to fix what we can. Like, the fact that their compassion is only limited to one side of the equation and not to people who are trying to detransition is just shocking. And I've heard multiple testimonies from people saying that insurance was great for them when they were going through transition, and, you know, mental health was great for them when they were going through transition. But the second that they said, you know what, this isn't for me anymore, I want to do something else, I want to detransition, no one wanted to touch them. Everyone was against them. Insurance wasn't covered, nothing. And it's just really sad that the bias against people in your position is so strong in America. And I just wish you all the best with your attempts to do legislative work on this, because it's so needed across every single state.
Thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate that. And I wish that somebody had told me that.
Can you give your website one more time for those who are interested in helping? And how can people help your organization out?
Yes. So my organization's website, again, is www.detranshelp.org. We're always looking and open for volunteers. You can also donate to us as well, and that will go towards resources and for detransitioners.
Thank you so much, Camille, for being on the podcast today. We are praying for you and that God would prosper your efforts with being able to help other people. I'm so grateful. Thank you so much for sharing your story on the Spotlight podcast today. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Until next time, stay healthy and stay active, and God bless you.
For more information about Illinois Family Spotlight, visit ifiaction.org. And to email questions and comments, do so at feedback@ifiaction.org.